Radio. Stay tuned. Stay locked. Good morning and welcome to Thursday. It's February 4th, 2016, and it's time for the Education Town Hall on We Act Radio. We're coming to you live from the heart of historic Anacostia here in Southeast Ward 8, Washington, D.C., down the street from the Big Chair. I first want to begin by thanking the Creator for this day and the opportunity to present to you the latest installment of the Education Town Hall. This is your humble servant and host, Thomas Byrd. Before starting the show, I want to first thank those who have supported this show financially. I want to thank DC Voice, the 21st Century School Fund, the Senior High Alliance of Parents, Principals, and Educators, also known as SHAPE. I want to thank the Washington section of the National Council of Negro Women. I want to thank the Ward 5 Council on Education. I want to thank Deborah Robinson. And I'd like to thank all the anonymous donors and sponsors who have contributed to this show. And I do indeed want to thank our major sponsor, the Washington Teachers Union, under the leadership of Elizabeth Liz Davis. And folks, if you or your organization believes that this is an important platform to give everyone access to the public square, then help us ensure that it remains available by offering your financial support. So please contact me at thomas.byrd@yahoo.com. That's thomas.byrd@yahoo.com. thomas.byrd@yahoo.com. We would indeed appreciate your support so that we remain viable for your benefit. All right. I believe we're going to have a great show today. I know I say that every week, but as my always my belief, we're going to be joined in a moment by Vanessa Bertelli, who's the co-founder and executive director of DC Language Immersion Project. Also, Jamel Sanders, who's a co-founder and director of engagement for the D.C. Language Immersion Project. And then the second half of the show, we're going to be joined by Marvin Tucker, who's the executive director of OCASE Foundation. So we're going to have a great show, I believe, as I mentioned. But before we get to our esteemed guest, I want to first bring in who's joining us remotely, folks, and we want to wish her well because she's having a back issue this morning. I'm talking about none other than our feature reporter, Virginia Spatz. Good morning, Virginia, and I hope you feel better very soon.
Hey, thanks, Thomas. Good morning. 10 of D.C. public schools will begin extending the school year with the 2016-17 academic year, District Mayor Muriel Bowser announced yesterday. But the announcement did not address a number of key issues, including cost, teacher burnout, and scheduling of renovations and repairs during the shorter breaks. Candy Peterson's Washington Teacher blog points out that the announcement mentions research supporting extended school years, but does not actually cite any. Some research suggests that summer learning loss is greater among disadvantaged students due to differences in range of summer opportunities, and it's clear that DCPS is trying to address this. But Elizabeth Davis, president of Washington Teachers Union, told the Washington Post that union leaders have not seen sufficient data from city officials showing that extending the year works. Meanwhile, she says, in the lowest performing schools, the focus has been on tests, reading and math, not providing students with a well-rounded curriculum. Simply extending the time is not the answer. As extended year programs become more popular, school districts are noting burnout effects from shorter breaks in children as well as in teachers. Look for some of the relevant research linked on our website, Education Town Hall, later today. Meanwhile, Hanover research found that in addition to higher yearly operational costs, transition costs as a new extended year system is implemented are big hurdles for extended year programs. Nearby Fairfax County, Virginia public schools, for example, experienced cost overruns in each of its first 3 years of extended year schooling, ranging from deficits of $438,000 to $1.4 million. The Washington Teacher blog also points out the irony of placing new demands on DCPS teachers while they have been working without a contract since 2012. Check out our website, educationtownhall.org, for more on this topic. With special thanks to Candy Peterson for staying on top of this development. This is Virginia Spatz reporting for the Education Town Hall on React Radio, powered by Ethical Electric.
Thank you so much, Virginia, for this weekly report. You're such a trooper. Even laid up, you still find time in a way to put your report together and deliver it for us. I'll just say, in response to your report, for me, the long and short of it is, if there's a school that is not engaged in quality teaching, extending the school day or year is only going to extend non-quality teaching, for a longer period, so.
Yeah, and that does seem to be what Liz Davis at the Teachers Union is cautioning. We have to look at it more carefully.
Yes, that's something that we're going to revisit in the days and weeks and months to come. Thank you so much, Virginia, for your report. All right, now we are going to turn to our first guests who are joining us from the D.C. Language Immersion Project. I'm talking about Vanessa Bertelli and Jamel Sanders. And I'll just begin, because they've been here before, but I'll just remind folks that the mission of the D.C. Language Immersion Project, which is a not-for-profit, is to improve achievement for D.C. and its residents by preparing a 21st-century-ready, logistically and culturally competent workforce through systematic implementation of dual language immersion programs in schools of all wards in the city, of the nation's capital. So I hope I didn't mess that up too much. Vanessa, welcome, and welcome to you also, Jamel.
Thank you, Thomas.
All righty. So I kind of shared your mission with the listeners. So why don't you give us a fill in some more background. When did you guys get started? How did this all come about? How long have you two been with the project, and then we'll go on from there.
Vanessa and I actually met about 2 years ago now. We were fortunate enough to be connected via another education advocate, Matthew Furman. He was having conversation with just various people, all of us working on the same effort to increase dual language, immersion programs throughout the city, and just, him having the insight to say, hey, I need to find a way to get everyone together. It doesn't make any sense for, everyone to be working in their own silos. And he was able to connect us, and, it truly was just kind of meeting your kindred spirit in terms of this effort. And then from there, we just realized that, if we're going to be successful, we need to be a lot more organized in how we approach looking to advocate for a true citywide plan that looks to increase programming and seats for the demand really that's out there. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, when you look at the waiting list for our dual language programs, you realize there's about 5 to 6 children looking for, every open seat. So, even though we have, choice within our education system, we feel, is it a true choice if you realize that, there's a low likelihood that you may secure a seat? I mean, there's also the challenge that, most of these programs, there is a cutoff date. in terms of when they'll accept children. So, you know, ideally you're able to secure a seat in the pre-K or at the very least by kindergarten. And after that, you know, unless you come from a native speaking family for the target language, the non-English language, you know, it's highly unlikely you would have the opportunity. So, you know.
And Thomas, maybe some of your listeners don't know what an English, what a language immersion program is.
I want to get to that. I wanted to get a little bit, because I want to ask, my first question was going to be, why is a dual language or language immersion important? So we'll get to that, but just give us a little bit about your background. I hope you don't mind me, Vanessa.
No, absolutely.
Vanessa and Jamel, okay? All right, Vanessa.
So, Thomas, I grew up in Switzerland, and in Switzerland, it is the norm for people to speak at a minimum of three languages. So, there are four national languages. Everything in the streets, at the airports, on the milk cartons is spelled out in three to four languages. At school, it is compulsory to learn all three languages, and that is excluding English, which obviously most people then learn as well. So we end up knowing four languages just as a matter of course, something that isn't considered odd or special. Mm-hmm. And I realized that through this amazing chance, I could get jobs that other people couldn't get. And I could have opportunities that expanded my horizons and made everything easier. And so I want that for my children. And I realized that through testifying in front of the council and through doing work at my local elementary school, I realized that I was by far not alone in this, and that most people, regardless of where they come from, understand that, you know, 75% of the world doesn't speak English, and mm-hmm. that the fastest growing economies are not English speaking.
So you kind of probably touched on some things regarding answer to my question that I posed a minute ago, and which I'll restate is, you say you're from Switzerland, so that's the norm there, but obviously that's not the norm here in the District of Columbia and probably not across this nation. So why is it important here in the District of Columbia that students be proficient in multiple languages, two or three languages? Why is that important?
I think to answer that, in terms of being multilingual, there's, you know, the biological component that, you know, studies show that people who speak multiple languages, you know, have a higher degree of executive functioning in the brain. Basically, these folks are, you know, better at problem solving, at pattern recognition, et cetera. So there's a biological component that there is truly a benefit, and then there is the, you know, economic, in terms of, you know, as Vanessa touched on, that it more and more, we're seeing more and more jobs that are calling for, you know, multi-language competency. And we want to make sure that, you know, our kids in DC can be competitive for those jobs. I mean, you know, we are home to the World Bank, IMF, State Department, you know, and various other organizations, internationally focused organizations. And I don't necessarily see folks really feeling that our kids are competitive or really have an option to pursue that line of work.
So let me ask, because you just indicated that when students learn, have dual language, they probably tend to excel more than those who don't. And so is there research that bears this out? I see on your website that you guys are research driven, so I want to kind of open that box a little bit.
Yes, absolutely. We pride ourselves on being data driven. Data is incredibly important because we need, when we approach these initiatives, whichever initiative in education, it has to be based on sound data. We cannot be poking around. We need something that is proven to work, and we need it now. And so in terms of one of the things that Jamel touched on, some very important biological issues, and those are well researched in neuroscience, but there's also some very interesting and important data coming out on achievement. out of North Carolina. There's an ongoing longitudinal study in its 10th year there. There is a longitudinal study in Portland, Oregon, that shows that there are achievement gains close to a whole school year in English reading for students who are in these dual language programs. So students who are in these dual language programs, and this particularly this Portland study is very good at eliminating self-selection bias and other things that could sort of scupper these findings. Students who are in these programs are much more likely to be much better English readers by the end of middle school. So, and we're not talking, you know, in education, as you know, a 2-week improvement in achievement is heralded as something, you know, groundbreaking, and mm-hmm. therefore we should implement that initiative. Here uh-huh. we're talking about an entire school year.
Yeah.
And so, and this is both, it's important to note that this is both across English language learners and English speakers. Mm-hmm. So both these demographics do very, very well in English. And these English, and these English achievement data doesn't even take into consideration the fact that these children then also happen to be fluent in this other language.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going to ask you one final question, and I'm going to give Virginia an opportunity in case she has a question or a comment. So I want to ask, how does your organization partner with DC Public Schools? How did all that come about? How did and how do you bring your project into the classroom?
Well, in terms of bringing it into the classroom, what we've worked on is, you know, having continuous workshops, information sessions. We actually have one coming up this month. It's entitled Language as a Pathway to Opportunity. In terms of really kind of starting at the basics, the nuts and bolts, we think it's really important to make sure that we're going out there and really giving people an opportunity to learn more about dual language programs, in particular, the pros, the positives, as well as giving an opportunity to school leadership and teachers also to come out and learn as well. And of course, you know, we always love to be invited to various schools, whether it's, you know, to the PTAs or the principals wanting to do a lunch and learn with their, you know, teachers to, you know, discuss what these programs are, what is necessary in terms of looking at planning and implementing a program, as well as meeting with the DCPS leadership on, you know, lessons learned from the existing programs and how we can best assist them and, you know, expanding programs and really taking a systematic approach about how do we look at the city in terms of where, you know, programs would be, you know, the real opportunities to spread out geographically these programs, and also, you know, engaging with them in terms of the communities that have approached DCPS directly and inquired about, you know, implementing one of these programs. And, you know, DCPS has also assisted us in terms of, you know, being that connector.
Okay. So we're going to take a break at 20 after. We got about a minute. So I'm going to give Virginia an opportunity. Virginia, do you have a question or a comment?
I do. I have two questions. I'll ask them, and then they could be addressed after the break, I guess. My first question is about the research in dual language instruction and whether it is specifically about immersion programs and classes where content is taught in the second language, or whether a lot of these benefits of being bilingual might be found just as easily from just language classes. That's one question. And my second question is about the response in a place like Ward 7, where the upcoming forum is, if parents are really on board with this. So those are my questions, and I guess...
So, no, we've been waived off the break, so we can have an immediate response to your two questions.
Okay.
Oh, thank you, Virginia. That's a really important question because people often don't understand that a dual language immersion program is a program that by definition requires children to be taught in the target language for at least 50% of the instructional time. So being taught in a target language is not being taught a language. The curriculum, the normal curriculum, is being taught through the medium of that target language, be it Russian, be it Arabic, be it whatever. So there is no increase in the number of hours that a child needs to be in school. There is no increase in the number of teachers that you need. It's a very cost-effective program, and it just relies on the innate ability that young children have to process and internalize language. So for them, just through hearing their teacher speak in a different language about, you know, electricity or about counting, it just solidifies the knowledge of that language. This is very, very different from what is called FLES, which is foreign language in elementary schools, which is supposed to be at least twice a week, 45 minutes, and I doubt that many of our schools have that in elementary school or in all levels of elementary school. And that, while it is, you know, helpful because children learn things like, you know, the colors and the names of the days, is it doesn't have by far the same effect on achievement or on linguistic and cultural competence. We have to remember that in a dual language immersion program, the cultural immersion aspect of it is as important as the language. People really become more fluent in how other people around the globe think. So that is also a very important
part. Let me kind of drill down a little bit in that, because I had a question popped up in my mind. So you indicate that they'll be instructed in that language, the target language. And so is that the math teacher that's actually doing that? Is that the history teacher? Is that just the teacher specifically to teach that language? How is that incorporated in secondary schools, particularly because they change classes? And so how is all that incorporated into a student's day?
So that's right. There's a difference between elementary school where the students are for the most part with the same teacher, and how it works in elementary schools is that teachers, there's the, say, Lithuanian teacher and the English teacher, and children go from one classroom. It's very, the visual part of these classrooms is very important. And so they go from one classroom to the other. In some models, they switch every half day. In some models, they switch every day. In some models, they switch every week. Mm-hmm. And so that is fairly straightforward. And there's various models as to how you split out the content, how you split out the curriculum between the two languages. But roughly, it's the same curriculum that is taught in two different languages. It's wherever the English teacher ends off on Monday night, the Portuguese teacher takes on Tuesday morning. In high school, it's a very different ball game because states all around the U.S. have had to deal with the fact that there are different languages coming into middle schools and high schools, and therefore they have to find ways for this to be effective and still affordable. So what ends up happening at schools like DCI here in the district is that they will have like social sciences or like science taught in, for example, Mandarin and so they'll split out by teachers exactly as you were mentioning. But there's different models there, too.
Okay. So who's going to tackle the second question?
In terms of demand, I think it's, again, important to look at the waiting list of all, whether it's charter or a DCPS school. And I think it's very clear that there is extreme, incredible demand out there. And as well as our Ward 7 kids are in all these programs. but, you know, as well as Ward 8. But when you look at opportunities for these kids to be able to take advantage of these programs in Ward 7 or 8, and 8, there are none. I mean, Houston Elementary School in the Ward 7 neighborhood of Deanwood will be the first program starting next school year, 2016-2017 school year. And we're very excited, and we're really proud that we have, you know, a principal there, Rembert Seward, you know, who's a visionary and who's willing to really take on that, you know, that pioneering role to say, you know what, this is a need. I support it, and I want to see it at my school.
You know, you just kind of led me into the question I had on mind to ask you next, and I think this is an appropriate time to raise it. So if I'm a school in Ward 8 and I'm a principal and I say, you know, I think this is important, and we need to bring this to our school, how does all that come about?
Well, I think it's important for, you know, the principal to really engage the parents, the local community, to make sure that this is something that is going to be supported. You know, in terms of working with DCPS, it's a process. You know, it's not something that necessarily that you can kind of make a decision one school year and be able to have a program up and running the next. It does take about at least 18 to 24 months. And so, you know, there's going to be that need to have ongoing conversations with your school community, as well as the teachers, again, just for, you know, that basic education in terms of what the program is, and making sure, again, people understand that the program, you're more than likely going to start at the pre-K 3, you know, and or 4 level. So, you know, there's not necessarily going to be a change in terms of curriculum for the existing kids there. But you also want to be mindful of ways that you can, you know, allow those the existing student population to have an opportunity to take advantage of learning that target language, whether it's through the FLES program or perhaps an after-school club. And then from there, it's really working with DCPS to really build out a program, you know, and again, it's a, you know, you're looking at about a 2-year process.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Luckily, you know, the city has, you know, about 40 years of experience with these programs. So, you know, the experience is built in. It really does just really take visionary leadership who are really willing to step out there, engage the community, and really look to build a quality program.
Okay, I know you want to chime in, but we've only got less than 3 minutes left, and I know you all want to talk about your upcoming event. I think you kind of mentioned language is a pathway to success, I believe you said. So I wanted to ensure that we have enough time to fully talk about that event. So Vanessa, if you can.
Thank you, Thomas, for making that time. A lot of work has gone into this event. It's called Languages as a Pathway to Opportunity, and it's co-sponsored by Alliance Française of DC and the Quebec Bureau. It's co-hosted by DC Public Library, by the DC State Board of Education, and by DC Immersion. And we're really lucky because Delia Goncalves from WUSA 9 is going to be moderating an amazing panel. We have Andy Shalal, the newly appointed chair of the DC Workforce Investment Council, and himself English language learner when he entered the country, who will talk about how languages impact the workforce. We also have Jacqueline Moron. She's a foreign service officer from inner city Detroit, who will tell about her experiences and how being a French speaker changed her career pathway. We will have a DCPS alum who was the main character in the amazing documentary Beyond the Wall, the story of these 4 DCPS children who
yes.
went to China.
Yes.
We will also have the event, and we're very lucky because the event is, and we will also have Madame Blé, who is the French dual language teacher at Elsie Whitlow Stokes Public Charter School, which will be giving a a sort of a mini class to show how language acquisition happens, like how she speaks to her children, to her three-year-olds on their first day to school, where they're going to be faced with only French for the whole day.
So where is this going to be and when? Repeat, because we got about 20 seconds.
It's going to be at the Francis Gregory Library on February 20th at 10:30 in the morning. There will be childcare.
Okay, fantastic. We certainly appreciate you both coming. Folks, we've been talking to Vanessa Bertelli, who's a co-founder and executive director of DC Language Immersion Project, as well as Jamel Sanders, who's also a co-founder and director of engagement. We certainly appreciate you coming on today. You guys, you're no stranger to us. Beyond the Wall, those students, I just love them all. I mean, that's a very wonderful story, and I like to hear stories like that, you know. So keep up the good work and continue to come back when you have something to share with us, and we wish you all the success going forward.
Thank you so much, Thomas.
All righty,
folks.
Thanks, Thomas. You're very welcome. Thank you. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break because it's the bottom of the hour, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by Marvin Tucker, who's the executive director of O'Case Foundation, and we're going to check in with him to find out what they're up to and what they have planned coming forward. So, folks, we're certainly glad that you've tuned in to us today because we know you have options. But I guarantee you, if you stay with us, we will be right back.
Bullock, and I'm a student at Ballou Senior High School.
My name is Wallace Bright, and I'm a student at Ballou Senior High School.
My name is Victoria Harper, and I'm a student at Ballou Senior High School.
My name is James Hill, and I'm a student at Ballou Senior High School.
We've been talking with our peers across the District of Columbia, and we discovered that a lot of them are talking about how they believe that we are not being provided the high-quality education that we know we need and quite frankly deserve.
They are talking about students in other jurisdictions who are, for the most part, learning and being supported in modern facilities and have access to 21st century technology.
We're hearing them say that there are actually three public school systems in the district, DCPS West, DCPS East of the River, and public charter schools.
They are saying things like, we have been subjected to too many experimental models, unproven educational fads, and countless changes in philosophy and direction.
Some students are talking about how they feel that some of those in charge of our education system talk the good talk about reform and use all the other buzzwords, but at the end of the day, don't really give a damn about academic achievement for all.
Worst of all, everyone is talking about how we don't even have any voice in the public discourse around the direction of our education system.
Until now, because we all listen and share our views on the education town hall, we are thankful that the host, Thomas Bird, believes that we should have access as well as a megaphone to talk back to the powers that be in the district and in halls of Congress. Join Thomas Bird every Thursday at 11 a.m. for the education town hall, 1480 a.m. Listen live online at weacradio.com.
This is Anika from Nubian Human, located at 1231 Good Hope Road here in Southeast D.C. We're excited to bring the third Black Love Experience at our home, February 20th, 7 to 11 p.m. It's art, community, and nothing but good vibes. Get your tickets at blacklovedc.splashthat.com. WEAC Radio. Do something.
Hi, I'm Denise Rolark Barnes, publisher of the Washington Informer newspaper, and you've asked whether I think a show on education is a good idea for the District of Columbia, and I would give an unequivocal yes, it is. Information is power, we always know that, but information about education, resources, the politics, the finances, the what our young people could and should be achieving and what should be taught in the classroom is an exceptional. You can't talk enough about it. Let me just say that. And I'm so glad that you are having the show. Continue to do the good work that you're doing. And folks out there, you just keep listening. If there's something you don't hear on the show, I'm sure that the folks here would love to hear from you and make sure it's a topic for an upcoming show. So keep on listening.
¶¶
All right. Now back live. Thank you so much for being here with us today on the Education Town Hall here on We Act Radio in the heart of historic Anacostia. I want to thank our guests who just left, Vanessa and Jamil. And they wanted me to ensure that I passed on something they forgot. If you're interested in attending their event, you can go to pathwaytoopportunity.eventbrite.com. That's pathway to opportunity, all one word, .eventbrite.com, and sign up to attend their wonderful event coming up later on this month.
And it's on our website already. The link is on educationtownhall.org.
Virginia is so efficient. Thank you so much for that. As Virginia said, it's already on our educationtownhall.org website. Fantastic. All right. Now we'll turn to our next guest, who's well known about town, a very outspoken advocate. I've known him for a number of years, and I'm glad to have him on the show. I'm talking about none other than Marvin Tucker, who's the executive director of O'Case Foundation. Welcome to the Education Town Hall, Marvin.
Thank you for having me here today, Mr. Byrd.
All righty. Listen, why don't you share for our folks, what is the O'Case Foundation? What is its mission? How did you get involved? Are you the founder of the organization?
Well, we got started some 7 years ago. We used to do this program with the D.C. Coaches Association when it started, and then when they no longer did the football event, my children and myself, Marvin and Marlena, decided to do something to help kids in the city. And we founded O'Case under the premise of helping kids stay in school and using athletics to further their education. You know, we it was a vision of former Mayor Gray's that athletics be a carrot to keep kids in school, and even though he's not in office now, we took up that charge to continue. So it's been a great 7 years for us, and we're enjoying what we're doing right now.
Okay, so you are the executive director. So you actually you and some others started the organization, and so you've been leading the organization since it began. Is that correct?
Yes. You know, my daughter Marlene is the CEO. My son Marvin is the president, and I'm the executive director. We have our executive board and our volunteers and our committee chairs. So we're a round-rounded class of maybe 60 people.
Okay.
That most folks don't get to see. They only see me because I'm always out in the public. But we have a large 60 group volunteers and all that.
Okay, so it's a family affair, sounds like. That's wonderful. And so, yeah, you definitely are high profile. You're out and about all the time. So I know you guys have an annual event. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Well, every year, the O'Case One City All-Star Extravaganza was the catalyst for us to doing other things, and we'll get into the other things later. But on March the 12th through the 18th, we'll have our One City All-Stars Extravaganza. Our Parent Summit is where we help educate parents on things like social media, special education, the NCAA Clearinghouse. And this year we added another topic of how to handle your finances. And with the help of TD Bank, we're going to make that happen. On the 16th, we'll have our Simeon Williams All-Star Basketball Classic, because this year we wanted to bring our middle school students along to show them that once they get to middle school, the next step is high school. On the next day, we did a One City All-Star Soccer Showcase, where we showcase students, 10th, 11th, and 12th graders, to college recruiters from all across the country to give them a head start on helping these kids get into school. And on Friday night, we end up with our big daddy of them all, is our high school all-star basketball tournament, where the best of the D.C. public schools versus the best of the charter, independent, and Catholic schools.
Wow. That sounds like a lot involved in that event. So let me go back to the beginning. The first day, I believe you said there's going to be a parent summit. So is that an all-day event? And what inviting parents from charters, DCPS, from all over the city. How are you recruiting parents for that, or how have you made it available to parents?
Well, because our organization is citywide, it's open to every parent. We have a limit on what we do because we provide lunch for them so they don't have to pay for lunch or anything okay. like that. And the workshops and seminar is free. So it's no cost to it. If we had to pay for this, it would cost you $300-$500 to attend. But we wanted to make it open and keep it so that parents can attend and get the information that they need. You know, as being a person that dealt with special education, we bring in folks to talk about special education and what their issues and giving parents a chance to get that information that they need. That parent summit is conducive because we want all the athletes to allow their parents to come because they need to know what you need to do and where you need to start to go in to get into college.
Okay, so speaking of athletes, how does your program interface with the DCP public schools as well as the charter schools? So you actually go to a school and meet with them? I mean, how does this whole thing work? You know, you say the mission is to increase academic achievement through athletics. So how do you actually go about that work?
Well, what we do is we've developed a great relationship with the coaches, the DCPS athletic department, the state athletic department. And what we've done is we've built this conglomerate of coaches that really come together. And what we do is we invite them, and they every year that they know this event is happening, so they actually send their students. It's just like with the DCPS athletic department. They started the All-Star game last year, but then they said they wanted us to be a part of it. And so that togetherness, along with their resources and things that they're providing to help us put on the middle school game. So it comes out to be a great relationship because it involves citywide. So you're talking about your St. John's, your Gonzagas, your mm-hmm. charter schools, and that's how it works.
Okay, so that's for the event. So the coaches send their athletes to your event. So is there like an ongoing presence or a work that you all do with those athletes during the rest of the year?
Well, what we do is we try to encourage them to stay in school. We do things for us with students that have issues or talking to coaches and finding out how can we help a student get recruited by a college.
Okay.
Like on the 18th, we invited over 250 colleges, whether they be Division I, junior college, wherever, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's about getting that piece of paper.
Yeah.
As I share with most athletes, you could fall and trip and fall out and bust a knee, tear Achilles and never play again. But when you have a degree, you have something to fall back on.
Okay. All righty. And so, what other programs, because I know you, did you touch on, because I know you guys give out backpacks. So is that at the beginning of schools, at through different situations or based on need? How does that work?
Well, that works fine, and I'm glad you brought that up because we do a backpack health fair event every year at the Reader's Water Ice on Rhode Island Avenue Northeast, and that takes a lot. As you know, we try to give away anywhere from 3,000 to 5,000 backpacks. We purchase the backpacks, and we have one of the best suppliers in the country. It's called D&W Sourceall that has really made it affordable for us to give backpacks with school supplies already in them. So when we talk about that event, we talk about Kaiser Permanente coming to Howard Dental Clinic, TD Bank. We talk about the Douglas Development who has come aboard to help us. We also have a publicist who helps us tremendously, Capital Public Relations. And so we've done a lot of things to help make that every year. But we also spread that backpack out. So we've done things at the homeless shelter on New York Avenue where we gave 500 backpacks to those kids.
Okay, so I got to ask because homeless is something that is close to my heart. I happen to be engaged in working with that population nowadays. So I want to ask, how did you all come to work to provide backpacks for the homeless shelter? Was there a coach that intervened, or how did that all come about?
Well, we Mark Jones, the State Board of Education and the former president of the State Board, came to me one day and said, Marvin, you know, we need to – I want to do something to help some kids that are in need, that don't have, might not have the transportation to come to Rita's. And so with the, with his help, Department of Health came in on, the D.C. Department of Health, and a special thank you to, you know, Clinton Porters, who came by there to say encouraging words to the kids. We found out that was a great event. We brightened the kids up that day, and with, you know, just letting them know that this is just a temporary situation, that good things are about to come, and we want to be a part of helping them get to that place.
Okay, fantastic. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to let Virginia jump in with a question or a comment, and we're going to continue to talk to Marvin Tucker, who is the executive director of OCASE Foundation. So I'm certainly glad that you're along with us today. I'm getting waved off again. We're not taking a break. Okay. So then I will give Virginia an opportunity to jump in with a question or a comment.
Okay, great. Thanks. I wanted to ask about soccer specifically, because that is a sport that my son was very involved in. And we live in Ward 6, and my son went to school without walls, which didn't have a coach, although it didn't have fields. But in Ward 6, we have soccer on the hill, and there's a Stoddard League up farther northwest. But when he was in school, he's been out a little bit. There was very little access to soccer east of the river, and he noticed a real big disadvantage when even his ragtag team would, like, meet with Blue, which at the time didn't even have a coach. So I'm just wondering about soccer specifically. Has access increased, and do you have some kind of way to help kids get into an alternative sport if they don't want to play football or basketball?
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up. Soccer is one of the sports that is oncoming, and it's actually growing. And because we wanted to, it's the international version of football, as we call it here. So, and so what we've done is we brought coaches from all across the city and kids all across the city to show, you know, to give them that opportunity, because they have college scholarships for soccer. Right. And so what we're trying to do is expand the program to get it out there so that others may come aboard, but then we can also reach back out to, I have a good friend over at the state office, Kenny Owens, that used to be, which started soccer. And so with his help and others, we've opened other doors that kids can participate with leagues, you know, throughout the city, but also attend the showcase, because it actually helps college coaches, because there was a young man at Blue that I've never seen before in my life, about 6'4", at Blue, and the college coaches last year said he was a 10th or 11th grader, and they said, wow, we didn't know about this kid until we came to the showcase.
Fantastic. So, folks, now we're going to take a quick break, and I assure you, if you stay with us, we will be right back and continue our conversation with Marvin Tucker, Executive Director of OCASE Foundation. See you on the other side.
Hello. My name is Thembi Duncan, and I am the Creative Programs Director at Young Playwrights Theater here in D.C. YPT is proud to announce a free Black Lives Matter pop-up event coming up on Monday, February 29th at 7 p.m. at the Anacostia Playhouse. The event is called Silence is Violence, Who's Next? And features D.C. students and professional artists performing plays, poems, and sharing visual art that addresses the Black Lives Matter movement in 2016. Special guest artists include the Griot Girls from Goldie Patrick's Fresh Theater Company. Who's Next centers around the work of Dominique Butler, a Cardozo High School student who lives in Anacostia and who has written two powerful plays about police, incarceration, and being a young Black man in America today. After the show, we will hold a talk back with the artists and provide space for community reflection on these critical issues. Tickets for Who's Next are actually almost sold out online right now, but we will make more available later in the month and at the door. So please come out and join us. for this free event on February 29th at the Anacostia Playhouse and raise your voice with us, because silence is violence. For more information, visit yptdc.org/events/silenceisviolence.
This is Virginia Spatz, feature reporter on We Act Radio's Education Town Hall. Add your voice to local and national education issues by listening Thursdays at 11 Eastern Time and by contributing your thoughts on our blog, We Act Ed, that's weacted.wordpress.com. We Act Radio, powered by Ethical Energy.
All right, we're now back live. Thank you so much for being here with us today on the Education Town Hall here at We Act Radio, Washington, D.C. And we have the honor and pleasure and privilege of having in studio with us today Mr. Marvin Tucker, who is the executive director of the O'Case Foundation. And he's been talking to us about some of their programs and activities that they're engaged in. And so I want to talk a little bit about how you sound like you guys do a lot with backpacks and these events, and there's certainly costs associated with all these things. So how do you guys sustain yourselves financially? Do you get grants? Do you solicit donations? How do you sustain yourselves financially?
Well, our focus is on sponsorship through corporate sponsorship and donations from the community at large. You know, we people like Catherine Bradley of the City Bridge Foundation, the Washington Teachers Union, who's come on board, Model Shoe City. So we use those kind of avenues, TD Bank, those kind of folks come on. But there's never enough money when you talk about sponsorship. So we also
I know. Hey, I faced that problem here at the Education Town Hall.
Right. So we ask the community to jump on board and go to our website, which is www.ocasefoundation.org, and you can donate. We turn down no amount because we need these to sustain our program. And that's how we've been doing it for the last 7 years.
So I assume you have a target amount in terms of sponsorships or funding amounts. And so have you been able to reach your goals in terms of the last 7 years that you've been in existence?
Well, we're close. And anybody that's been in business know your first 5 years are your toughest 5 years. And yeah. I'm sure you can relate to that. It's getting there. But we're growing every year. We're adding more and more corporate sponsor, but we wanted the community to jump in and help us, because what we figure, if we can just save one student to get them where we need to get to, with all the violence and things that are going on in our city today, it's about helping them get in school, helping them stay in school, help them become that productive citizen that one day Mr. Bird might be sitting behind the mic with their We Act show.
Ah, yeah, that's wonderful to think. So So you want to encourage folks to donate to your efforts, and I certainly encourage that as well. So we've got a few minutes left. So what do you plan on keeping your model the same as it's been, or are you looking to kind of tweak things or change things or expand things going forward?
Well, we've started tweaking things. Just this year, we partnered with the Campbell AME Church. We fed 75 to 80 families in the Berry Farms area with complete baskets for Thanksgiving. We partnered with Clinton Portis and the 2-6 Foundation, and we fed some 300 folks in the Ward 8 community at Bald Eagle. So, you know, we're expanding. We're looking down the road to having a full focus education model where we're going to go in and add the elementary schools to our program.
Oh, okay. So you're branching out and doing other things in the community. That sounds wonderful. I want to go back to your upcoming event. And so I believe there there's a process for parents to become involved. Can you share a little bit about how parents can assume the registration or whatever you call that?
So. Right. So what we did, we streamlined our process this year so the parents can actually go online and register for the Parent Summit, which is March the 12th. And then for the student athletes, we need them to fill out the consent form and medical waiver, and that's all online. So once their coaches select them, they all they have to do is we made it very simple because kids are more technology savvy than we are. So they'll go online, fill out the form, have their parents sign it, and get it into us, and so that they can be cleared to participate in all the events. So, and again, those events start March the 12th through the 18th. And one other big thing that we really noticed that every year we have, and I do this for the kids only, I take them out to dinner. So we're going to the Hampton Crown Plaza this year where we're going to, the high school all-stars will be having their annual banquet. So, you know, I like to say a plug out to that organization at the Hampton Crown Plaza because, you know, when you looking and you talking to kids and working with kids, a lot of people don't understand it, but they jumped in with both feet, and I want to thank them and their catering directors over there for their support.
So you're taking the athletes out, so do you also take their parents, or is it just a closed event just for the athletes?
It's a closed event for the athletes because when we do our Parent Summit, we actually feed, and this is one of my board members, we don't do box lunches. We do chicken, fried chicken, mashed potatoes, gravy, cake, the whole nine yards, and then for dessert, Rita's has been so graceful as to serve dessert. So yeah. We feed the parents just like we feed the athletes.
Oh, okay. And Virginia, I wanted to give you a final opportunity because we're running out of time. In case you had another comment or question.
I did have another question, and it's again about access. I see that you have a girls' basketball part of the extravaganza, but are girls being recruited at the level that boys are when it comes to college?
Yes. We've been fortunate. We've had 60 to 70% of our student athletes at those games sign scholarships with colleges. So when we invite 250 colleges, we invite 250 colleges that also recruit females. And females are a real big part of our program as well. So when you talk about that, Virginia, when we look at students that need community service, they can volunteer that day. We can help them get some of the community service that they need to graduate.
Mm-hmm, okay.
So what we do is it's focused well-rounded around athletics is a key, but it's focusing around keeping kids in school no matter what they do.
Fantastic. So as we get ready to wrap up this segment with you, is there anything you want to share with us, anything that we have not talked about that you want to make sure that folks are aware of?
Well, we want everybody to come out. We want you to support these student athletes because at the end of the day, we come together as a city. And one of the biggest things about our organization, we're focused right here in the nation's capital. We don't go outside. We don't bring anybody in. We stay right here because we find that we have a need and we need to cater to that need. Whatever it is, we need to help our students, whether athletes or non-athletes, parents or community to join in to help to make this a success.
So I want you to break some news now. At that athletic banquet, are you going to have any celebrities there?
Well, we Josh Morgan is on the plate, who used to be a former Redskin. We have possibly one of the DC United. This is the first year we're going to actually probably have a speaker that's an actual soccer player.
Oh, okay.
And not the traditional basketball or football player. So we're working through our publishers at Capital Public Relations to put that all together. But yeah, and if Mr. Bird would like to get an invitation, I certainly like to extend one to him today.
Hey man, well, thank you so much for your kindness and your generosity. I certainly appreciate that. I would love to have an opportunity to interact with those young men and women, those athletes. So that will be wonderful. Folks, we are certainly so glad that Mr. Marvin Tucker, who's the executive director of the OKACE Foundation, took time out of his busy schedule to come by and share with us all about his organization and the work that they do. Marvin, we really appreciate you stopping by, man.
Well, I thank you for the opportunity to interact and be a part of the WEAC and the Educational Town Hall today.
Yeah, man, you're part of the family now, so feel free to come back. And if you want, and I was just about ready to go there. I heard Mom, Ron wish for contact. I'm going to say, give us your contact one more time real quick.
Well, you can reach us at our website is www.ocasefoundation.org, and you can reach us there, or you can reach us by phone at 202-241-5186.
And I want to thank you, sir, and I want to thank those who are listening to this show right now and those who have been following the show, because if you have been following us from the beginning, you'll know that today marks our fourth anniversary. We've been doing this show for 4 years as of today, and I'm so grateful to WEAC Radio and the founders of WEAC Radio. I'm so grateful to Virginia Spatz. I'm so grateful to Ron Pinchback for all the work they've done. I'm grateful to all the interns that have worked on this show. I never thought starting out 4 years ago we'd be going this long, but I am so thankful and so grateful for everybody who's ever had participation and who've been on the show, who's contributed. Everybody, we thank you so much. And we're going to close now, and I'm going to wish you a wonderful week until next Thursday at 11 a.m. Have a wonderful and great, prosperous, safe week. Thank you, Ron Pinchback, our engineer. Virginia Spatz, get well with that back, our featured reporter. This is your humble servant and host, Thomas Byrd. Peace.
This is Anika from Nubian Human, located at 1231 Good Hope Road here in Southeast D.C. We're excited to bring the third Black Love Experience at our home, February 20th, 7 to 11 p.m. It's art, community, and nothing but good vibes. Get your tickets at blacklovedc.splashthat.com. WEAC Radio. Do something.
Do not ratify the agreement. Sharon Burrow, the General Secretary of the International Trade Union Confederation, the ITUC, urged